Exciting news from Wall Street. Our wealth markets are booming. Everything from the Dow Jones average to gold prices are rocketing to new records, showering us with wealth from above. Oh, wait, maybe you're one of the big majority of workaday Americans who don't own stocks or gold, so maybe you're not celebrating Wall Street's big boom. But just chill, because conventional corporate wisdom assures us that the wealthy will invest their good fortunes in enterprises that eventually will produce trickle-down gains for everyone. Excuse my rudeness, but let's take a peek at how those who are reaping today's big buck bonanza are actually investing that wealth. Look at Wall Streeters themselves. The big banks have been making money like bankers, with their stock prices zooming up by 28% just since January. So how are these moneyed elites spending this windfall? Not by making job-creating investments, but by simply giving the money to their big shareholders, including their own top executives, nearly all of whom are already among the richest people on Earth. The main way they do this is through a sleight of hand called a stock buyback. The honchos simply cash out the bulk of that 28% increase in the value of the bank's stock price, using that money to repurchase more of their bank's own stock from lesser shareholders. Hocus pocus, this manipulation artificially pumps up the value of the stock these insider shareholders already own, making each of them even richer than rich, although they've done absolutely nothing to earn this increased wealth. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's not a small scam. J.P. Morgan Chase is now sinking $30 billion into buying its own stock. Wells Fargo is shifting $18 billion into the scheme, and Bank of America is throwing $25 billion into its buyback. Wall Street bankers are the biggest robbers in America. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is brought to you by the Lowdown Happy Hour, live streamed from the Chat and Chew Cafe. Details at HightowerLowdown.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So there's an interesting story over at the Washington Post about this group called the Independent Women's Forum. And I get emails from them all the time. They make themselves out to be, oh, they're just moms. You know, they just care about women's issues and, you know, they're just, you know, just good, strong, independent moms and, you know, just a grassroots group of you know, women who just, they just want better stuff. Anyway, you find out they're a front group for the Koch brothers and that right-wing policy stuff. So they're shilling for, well, the state policy network and all the moneyed interests. But they do it in such a down-home, folksy kind of way that it makes you kind of go, oh, maybe they are real. They're not. And what's interesting is you look at all the money that's being spent on messaging and convincing us what is, isn't, and what isn't is, especially on a day like today with all the stuff coming out. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what really is, I've asked our good friend Lisa Graves to come talk with us. Lisa is the executive director of True North Research. They're a corporate watchdog group. She's been a part of some of the most important investigative and exposing things. You may remember Alec Exposed and all of the things that came out of that media, Source Watch and all of that stuff. She's the one behind all of it. Lisa, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it's a joy to be on your show. Thank you so much for inviting me on. I really appreciate it.
So, you know, I'm looking at today as an interesting day. We see the revelations now that rich people don't pay their taxes, Lisa. Rich people hoard their money in offshore accounts. Rich people use tax havens. Wow.
Well, you know, the thing is that as you point out, it's something that we already knew, but it's also the case that the details are pretty extraordinary. And I think this is obviously just the tip of the iceberg. We saw a bit of this in some ways before with the Panama Papers revelations a couple of years back. And this new set of materials in terms of what's been happening with these tax havens, you know, I think there's going to be more to come as more and more people get a look at the materials that have been unearthed, because it's just going to show in some ways, I suppose, what Warren Buffett has said all along, which is it's absurd that he pays less taxes than his secretary as a kind of a net amount. But the reality is that some folks aren't paying any taxes at all, which we know from some of the corporate tax cuts that Koch Charles Koch wanted that Trump enacted with the help of Mitch McConnell. But this is, you know, putting some names to the faces and some amounts, and also the widespread nature of this from in the U.S. and other countries.
You know, but I look at, you know, again, the messaging that's coming out of today, for me anyway, is you've got Facebook and their algorithm that's pushing the hate and the you know, the basically the corporate hate message to keep us pitted against each other. You got the tax people who are robbing us blind, and we're still not getting anything done to move the country forward on infrastructure or investment. And it just seems like if you're the average everyday schmo, literally the world is against you at every opportunity.
Well, you know, it is really stunning, because right now Congress is considering, or has been considering for a while, the Build Back Better agenda. That's part of what, you know, people have talked about in this reconciliation for the Congress. But the fact is that as one of my dear friends was telling me about this weekend, study after study has shown that one of the things that really is a driver of division and fear is this economic inequality, is that how much pressure people are facing, how much fear they have about losing their jobs or keeping their jobs. And then you have, as you point out, Facebook just driving further division, that it's super profitable for them to drive that division. And you have groups like the Independent Women's Forum that you led with, which we've documented over and over, has really been driving such a divisive message despite its independent name.
Right.
But the fact is people are really, you know, people are struggling. And when they're struggling, you know, they're susceptible to those messages of blame someone else. But that Build Back Better package, if it were to go through and provide access to childcare, affordable childcare for families, paid leave for families, there's so many parts of that would really make a material difference in people's lives. And it would release some of the pressure valve that people are under.
No, absolutely. And this is one of the things that I was saying. You know, if you were to take all of this stuff and put it together, you know, Facebook's pushing the anger and the hate. You're getting robbed. Your wages have been stagnant for 40 years. Your healthcare is getting worse. Your pension security's been damn near eviscerated. You're worried about paying for the kids for college. You got all this stuff. And then you got, because you're feeling overwhelmed, I can't change this. Then you got people like the Independent Women's Forum saying, well, you shouldn't have to wear a mask. So now you go, hey, I can change this. I can hold on to, I'm not wearing a mask. And that's where you make your stand, which is just, well, one, goofy, but two, I guess, predictable.
Well, it is, you know, it's been astonishing to watch them, in particular over the last year and a half. You know, they opposed reasonable measures to shut down as the pandemic was getting started, as, you know, tens of thousands of people were dying in New York, and there were icebox, you know, morgues, trucks, refrigerator trucks for the number of people who were dying, you know, at such a pace. And then you come into this year and they've, you know, been really attacking the vaccines, vaccine rules, vaccine mandates. They've been attacking the health advice of, you know, numerous health officials in the government, including Fauci, but others. And they have really tried, I think, to seize on this mask issue. Their response to that Washington Post story was, oh, no, they were merely calling for a debate in the letter that they were circulating by their policy director, who they tried to portray as just an ordinary person who wrote this in the dark of night. She may have written it at night, I don't know, but she's been their longtime policy advisor for them. In fact, she helps lead their effort to attack access to paid leave in Colorado and nationally, to try to oppose efforts by progressives to ensure that Americans have access to paid leave. But beyond that, IWF over and over, through each of these women who are their fellows, that there's numerous of them, have attacked masks, have attacked the vaccine, have attacked orders and rules to protect kids, to protect teachers. And so, you know, they have joined the bandwagon with some of these right wingers as well, to try to use the mask issue as a way to I think motivate the right wing base, and like you said, give them something to focus on instead of other things that actually would make their lives demonstrably better, like the Build Back Better plan, which IWF, you know, strongly opposes.
Right. No, I mean, it's always the, you know, moving the string around for the cat to chase around, or the laser pointer to keep you distracted. Here, the shiny thing, follow this. While we're literally, and we see this all the time, literally being robbed blind. And I keep coming back to, you know, there's a lot of money being spent on convincing us that what's really happening isn't really happening. And, you know, I go back to something my grandfather always said: if a rich guy is going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. And we better start spending to reclaim our democracy. We better start acting to reclaim our policy and demanding better from, well, at least the Democrats in this moment, because the Republicans have really shown themselves as the party of, well, the very wealthy and the connected.
Well, that's right. I mean, the tax cut that Charles Koch said was his once in a generation wish list. And then they went to work through Americans for Prosperity, which I call Americans for Greed, but their official name is Americans for Prosperity. And their team, they spent millions to get that tax cut. That tax cut isn't just for Charles Koch. It's for future generations of Kochs. And it's for the future generations of the Mercers, you know, or name your billionaire. It's, you know, could be Bezos. It could be whomever. They don't need those tax breaks. The amount of money that $1 billion represents is just truly mind-blowing to an ordinary American, where, as you said, the wages have really stagnated for people. Minimum wages have been stuck for years and years and years, let alone benefits being raided by these, you know, hedge funds and these, you know, corporate raiders. And so, you know, this idea that, like you said, if the rich are trying to get these tax cuts or keep them in place, you know, we really need to organize even more and redouble our efforts to basically restore some equity, actually restore real equity and progress a real progressive tax basis for this country, because that's what helped America thrive. That's what helped our economy thrive. Because when these billionaires are socking money away, they're not down at the local store spending their money. You know, if we have money in our pockets, ordinary people, we spend it in town. You know, if the money is coming into our communities, into our pockets, ordinary people spend it because we have bills to pay. We're not just like socking it away in some, you know, villa in Italy or some, you know, semi-Swiss bank account down in the Caribbean. We're spending it here in America, and that creates jobs here in America.
Absolutely. It's time to get out the shovel and dig up the policies of the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower. It's time for us to revive the Eisenhower tax code. Clearly, the wealthy in this country have abused the privilege of buying our politicians. It's time we go back to a 92% top marginal tax rate, and we tax them basically out of existence. We should not have billionaires in this country.
Well, the other thing that is just outlandish, and what you're seeing, and like you said, the buying of the politicians, is when they've got you've got a half a billionaire or billionaire, you know, spending $1 million on a political campaign, you know, writing $1 million check to eviscerate local public schools or to try to buy a school board, which is, you know, some of the work that AFP has done in Colorado, for example, in years past, to try to take over a school board. Like, that's nothing to them. $1 million is a lot of money for other people. When they have all this money, they can spend it to buy our politicians, to buy public policy that serves their interests and not our own. And so it's not just that it's terrible policy to have the tax policy that we have and not have one, like you say, going back to Eisenhower, or even, you know, that decade or the decade after that. The fact is that it's not just that they're keeping more money, they're using that money, some part of that money, to basically completely distort public policy, so that policies like those in the Build Back Better plan, which significant majorities of Americans want and need, are stifled by politicians who are beholden to people like Charles Koch.
Which is why it's important that there are groups like yours doing the kind of work that you have been doing for years now. The Center for Media and Democracy was one of the first places that I went to find the kind of information that I think is important on these state policy networks and how the money really flows through these back rooms and into these euphemistically named think tanks who push these horrible policies. So tell me the group that you're in charge of now, this True North Research. What are you guys working on currently?
Well, you know, we've been working on a lot of work around the dark money that's influencing the U.S. Supreme Court. The amount of money that's gone into these amicus briefs by these far right wing organizations, as well as the process to basically pack the court with the three people that Trump put on the court. And so the Supreme Court term began today. And, you know, one of the things we're looking at is how much of this dark money, in essence, is moving through these groups that are now basically creating the blueprint for these very far right wing justices. I think very unfair judges, people who were chosen in my view because they thought they would be unfair, because they thought they would roll back worker rights, roll back women's rights, roll back our rights to regulate corporations. Like, it is an agenda that actually Washington Post covered a couple of years ago in a piece by Robert O'Hara and Sean Boberg. It talks about how Leonard Leo, who everyone knows was the guy who was called the Trump Judge Whisperer, he was telling funders how we were at the precipice of a revolution in the law that had not been seen in 100 years since before the New Deal.
Yep.
And that they, you know, basically had the people in place to dramatically, radically change our law without any debate by us, without informing people about what their real agenda was. And he thought that they had the court to basically accomplish that. And now we're seeing those that unfold. And so a lot of my work right now is looking at the Supreme Court. We just had a decision early this year that went in favor of Charles Koch's Operation America's for Prosperity to try to keep regulators from having access to knowing who the biggest donors were for some of these big nonprofits that are playing such a big role in our elections. And so there's a substantial amount of concern I have about how this Supreme Court is stacked to betray modern America and try to reverse decades of precedent under our feet. We're going to have a lot of organizing to overcome this Supreme Court.
No, you're absolutely right. And your audio went out a little bit. You know, it's one of those things where I've been talking about this for a while, and I'm glad that you guys are doing this. And the website, truenorthresearch.org, if you want to keep up with this. But in bringing up the Supreme Court, the reality is you know, I agree. You know, they want to undo all of the 20th century and return us to the days of the Lochner era in employment law and policy and undo the entire regulatory state so that, you know, if the wealthy have the money and the power to buy what they want, that's how it is. And the rest of us are, well, desperate, poor, where life is short, brutish, difficult and short. Where they want to return us to.
Yeah, I appreciate your mentioning that Lochner era, because that was an era in which the Supreme Court and other courts were very active in saying that the, quote, freedom of contract meant that employers could dictate terms that would overcome any public policy, basically child labor laws, overtime laws, worker safety laws. You know, this is in the era where we had the triangle shirt factory, where the women were locked in and died in that terrible fire. There were, you know, 100 years ago was not a very good place to be living as an ordinary person. If you were a worker, you had, you know, very little say about your workplace. You had no real security. And so this idea that Leonard Leo and his buddies on the court, his friend Brett Kavanaugh and others like Amy Coney Barrett want to, you know, are basically chosen to reverse the precedents that have protected workers, in my view, and protected people's human rights, in my view. It's a terrible circumstance, and I think this court is not trustworthy and is about to do a lot of things that are going to be very damaging. And the challenge is to not be defeated by their decisions, but to organize to overcome them, because that's
absolutely
what we're going to have.
Because what everyone's focusing on is everything's looking at Roe. And I'm going, while we're focused on Roe and that's a horrible thing and we've got to fight that, they're going to do everything else. Because ultimately, this is a corporate court before it's a cancel culture court or however you want to frame it, a culture war court. This is a corporate court. This was built to make the rich richer, and to make the rich more powerful, and to make all the rest of us weaker. While all this other stuff is grabbing our attention, the shiny things, they're again robbing us blind.
That's right. You know, and it's interesting because Clarence Thomas has gotten a lot of mileage about his personal story of being from Pinpoint, Georgia, but he also was the Monsanto lawyer. And that Monsanto, the work he did for Monsanto, which is one of the biggest agricultural, you know, fertilizer companies in essence in the world, has a, you know, very troubling checkered past in how it's treated people in the U.S. and in other countries in terms of its products. That's who Clarence Thomas was, the Monsanto lawyer, not just the guy who, you know, Anita Hill said harassed her, who, by the way, that's how Independent Women's Forum got its start. Was women, you know, women for Clarence Thomas, and they have called themselves independent, and even their head person, Heather Higgins, was quoted talking to some funders, talking about how it was so great that their name was independent because the people who know they're really, quote, conservative. I don't think they're really conservative. I think they're pretty far right. But the fact is that, you know, we have a situation in which Roe is clearly in peril. That decision is clearly in deep danger, but it is not the only thing that's in danger. And there's going to be a lot of focus on that while they try to maybe push through other things that are equally radical but won't get as much attention. And in fact, I would say to you, Rick, that I think one of the things we're seeing is that I think the far right or the Republican right doesn't think they need Roe necessarily anymore to win elections. they're ready to be post-Roe. You see their talking points post-Roe because they think that they've managed to distort, in my view, this is my opinion, they've managed to distort the right to vote so that they don't need Roe as, you know, such a motivating factor. They can rejigger the maps, distort the maps, make it harder for people to vote, and so that they can prevail, even though they do not represent the majority view in America on almost any issue.
Yeah, they don't need to win on ideas because they're figuring out how to steal the elections while claiming the other side's doing it. But Lisa, thank goodness you're there. Thank goodness the True North Research is out there keeping people informed. And I hope you'll come back and share some more of this with us because it's really important stuff.
Rick, it's a joy to be on your show, and I'm glad to come on for True North and also as the president of Center for Media and Democracy. We're doing our best to try to shine a light on things, and I know you are too. I so appreciate your show, and I so appreciate the chance to be on.
Thanks so much, Lisa. Good stuff. Lisa Graves, the executive director of True North Research. Make sure you check out their website, truenorthresearch.org. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Here at The Rick Smith Show, we don't accept corporate advertising. Never have, never will. We don't stop the show every few minutes to sell you supplements, beet juice, or whatever snake oil the right-wing loonies are pawning. It's also because we're supported by our friends in labor and by people like you. If you like what we do, become a patron by going to patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. That's patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. Give what you can, if you can, and help us fight for the working class majority. Because together we bargain, divided we beg. Thank you for tuning in.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1936. That was the day Londoners referred to as the Battle of Cable Street. By some accounts, as many as 250,000 trade unionists, radicals, and anti-fascist fighters joined together to protest Sir Oswald Mosley's British Union of Fascists. The fascists planned to march in black shirt uniform through London's then heavily Irish and Jewish working class East End neighborhood. Mosley's BUF scapegoated Jews for the economic crisis brought on by the Great Depression. He had drawn thousands to rallies in previous years, and now looked to impose fascist dominance over the most vulnerable of Londoners. Bill Fishman, a Jewish activist and son of an immigrant tailor, who was there on that day, recollected, quote, "I was moved to see the bearded Jews and Irish Catholic dockers standing up to stop Mosley. I shall never forget that as long as I live. How working class people could get together to oppose the evil of fascism." The Metropolitan Police stationed as many as 10,000 policemen to keep counter-protesters from directly confronting the BUF. But the anti-fascists physically blocked every possible path into the East End. They constructed barricades along Cable Street made from paving stones and household furniture. Women emptied garbage bags and chamber pots from windows onto the fascists. Marbles were thrown in the direction of the fascists and their protectors. Seamen pulled out their lorries and turned them on their sides. Tram drivers parked and abandoned their streetcars in the middle of the street to prevent the fascists from continuing their march. Protesters chanted the slogan of the Spanish Civil War, "No pasarán," or "They shall not pass." And that day, the fascists did not pass. They were stopped by the power of working people.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I think the work that, you know, Lisa's groups have, throughout the years have done, like I said, she was a big part of ALEC Exposed. When nobody knew who the American Legislative Exchange Council was, her group was out there saying, look, this is who they are. This is where they came from. You know, basically founded out of that whole Paul Weyruch, Heritage Foundation kind of pot of money that came out of the Powell memo, this idea that corporate America had to spend a statesmanlike sum of 10% of their profits to convince we, the dumb working people, that, well, the benevolent corporation cared about them again. And they did. They did a masterful job. If you look at the Powell memo and you look at how well they executed it over the decades since 1971, they have done everything they wanted to do. Because they got us, the working people who were benefiting from strong unions, from strong regulations, from employment policies that benefited people in safety and in health and in wages, to go against that and say, no, we don't need that now. We're better than that. And under the guise of freedom and liberty, they've convinced us that, well, you know what? The benevolent corporation, if we give them enough, This is the essence of trickle-down economics. It was the great scam. And I had someone say to me today, well, you know, the scam didn't work. No, the scam worked exactly the way it was supposed to. It was to fleece us. It was to enrich them. It created the largest billionaire class in existence ever. Worked exactly the way it was supposed to. It got us to go, no, we don't need to tax rich people. No, because they spend the money and they're the job creators. They're the producers. And they got us to repeat it because they kept telling us over and over and over again. And you saw elections where, you know, we want producers, not parasites. We want people who sign the front of the check, not the back of the check. They had really nice, well-focused, group-tested, think-tank-approved, bumper-sticker, sloganeering messages for us to digest and to internalize so we could regurgitate them at the drop of a hat. Trained like Pavlovian dogs, to the second they say go, we'd start foaming. And yes, we bought it because we thought we were going to be them. You know, Steinbeck's Embarrassed Millionaires. We thought we were going to... We're going to go into the garage and we're going to tinker and we're going to throw a couple of bolts together and some of that plastic crap from the kids' toys, and we're going to build something and we're going to be the next Bezos or Bill Gates, and we're going to be gazillionaires. And then I wouldn't want to pay taxes either. But the sad reality is the vast, vast, vast majority of people never get there. They toil their life away working for a job that barely pays the bills, that comes with bare minimum benefits so that they just barely stay afloat. And you wonder why people are ticked off. Because they're getting to the end of the road and they're going, everything I was told, if I work hard, I play by the rules, that I'm going to get ahead, that my kids are going to be better off, that I'm going to leave them something for the future. You know, I fought to make sure that there was no estate tax, thinking I would have an estate to pass on. Well, it ain't there. And what's remarkable to me is how well the right has done their messaging. And you got to give them credit. They're brilliant at it. They convinced a guy who might get a $10,000 inheritance when someone passes away that you don't want someone to tax that. Even though you're at the time, I remember this conversation, the person got a $10,000 inheritance. And he said, well, I don't want to have to pay taxes on it. I go, well, You're really only about, you know, 10,999,990 dollars short of paying any taxes. So, you know, maybe if another, you know, in another gazillion years, maybe, because they've made us internalize, we don't want to pay any taxes. Death tax. Death tax. When you realize that, you know, you didn't pay the estate tax until you got to something like $11 million at the time. And they've dwindled that down to, because, hey, the small family farmer, which they never did find. Because they lie to us all the time. So the question is, when do we wake up? And is this moment, the Panama Papers, is this it? I sure hope so. Sure hope it is. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
It's Thursday, September 30, 2021.
The only way that Semper or any other utility understands anything is in the pocketbook. gas company agrees to nearly $2 billion settlement in largest methane leak in U.S. history. 23 U.S. species coming off the endangered list because they're now officially extinct. Plus,
now Ford is going all in on electric, pledging that within 9 years, 40% of its fleet will be battery powered.
Ford makes an $11 billion bet on electric vehicles.
All of those good bets and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
When we meet the threat of the challenging climate we're all feeling, already ravaging every part of our world, or will we suffer the merciless march of ever-worsening droughts and floods, more intense fires and hurricanes, longer heat waves, and rising seas?
Yeah, that last one. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, finally, justice for those folks in Porter Ranch outside of Los Angeles, a town that really stunk for quite a while.
Yes, it did. Utility SoCalGas and its parent company Sempra Energy have agreed to pay up to $1.8 billion as part of a settlement agreement in the Aliso Canyon gas leak of 2015, the largest known release of methane in U.S. history caused by a blowout at an underground gas storage facility. The companies did not admit fault.
They never do.
But did eventually acknowledge numerous failures, including failure to inspect key equipment. The four-month-long methane leak sickened residents, closed schools, and forced the evacuation of more than 8,000 people. The LA Times editorial board noted that the settlement cannot undo the long-term damage to the climate from methane, a powerful greenhouse gas. The leak was equivalent to burning more than a billion gallons of gasoline.
Wow.
In other news, as Congress debates passage of President Biden's climate agenda in his Build Back Better plan, a new poll by Yale Climate Communications shows a dramatic increase in Americans' concern over the impacts of climate change. An all-time record, 70% of Americans are now very or somewhat worried about global warming. The percentage of those very worried increased 10 points just since the last survey 6 months ago. And the increased concern ranged across all political groups, including a 10% boost from moderate Republicans.
There are no moderate Republicans.
And for the first time, a majority of Americans, 55%, agreed that climate change is harming people in the United States right now.
Only 55%?
Yep.
What planet do they live on?
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced that 22 animals and one plant in the United States will be removed from the endangered species list and declared extinct, including 8 bird species in Hawaii. Mm. It's due primarily to habitat loss from human development, hunting, and the multiple cascading effects of man-made climate change. Meanwhile, the Biden administration has finalized a rule that revokes the Trump administration's rollbacks of protections for birds, which Trump had weakened at the request of the oil and gas industry. And the Interior Department has also withdrawn a Trump administration rule that resulted in vastly reduced royalty rates for oil, gas, and coal extraction from the public's lands.
They better hurry up reversing all of that Donald Trump stuff before he becomes president again.
The Biden administration this week will begin phasing in new rates for federal flood insurance, requiring beachfront homeowners to gradually begin paying something closer to the actual cost of their actual individual flood risk. The shift to rates that reflect actual flood risk is intended to end the repetitive cycle of taxpayers spending millions to subsidize the repair and rebuilding of such homes over and over again. And that, in turn, is likely to change where coastal development occurs as rising seas and extreme weather disasters increase due to man-made climate change.
Hey, people who live near beaches, now's a really good time to sell that house.
Finally, some big good news. Ford Motor Company announced this week that it will invest more than $11 billion to build 4 new factories in the United States in its push to shift to electric vehicles, 3 battery factories and an electric truck plant in Tennessee and Kentucky, hiring 11,000 new workers and building what the company pledges will be carbon neutral facilities. Henry Ford's great-grandson, Chairman Bill Ford acknowledged that it is a major risk for the venerable company.
It's a bet that I'd make any day of the week because electrification is coming, the battery industry is coming to America, and we just want to be at the forefront of it.
What would your great-grandfather say today about your new Model T for the 21st century?
I think he'd say what took you so long.
No kidding. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me. So take it easy.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interesting news coming out of the House Select Committee that's investigating the January 6th treason. Evidently going to be looking into former Vice President Mike Pence. A lot of people saying, oh, Mike Pence did the right thing. No, Mike Pence was looking for a reason to say yes, just couldn't find one. So I do find it interesting that they're going to look into this. And Jamie Raskin, the Democrat from Maryland, said that this is we're going to find out how deep in this he was. And I think that's important. I think it's important to know. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, of which there are plenty. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So what do you think of this? I said from the beginning, Pence was looking for a way to say yes and just didn't find it. Should he be investigated?
I mean, I think they can look into him. And, you know, in the end, he made some statements that, you know that he wasn't going to do this. But I do recall, and I can't remember, Rick, which story it was in, but I recall a while back reading something that kind of puzzled me because there was a quote from Pence, and I probably shouldn't even say what I can't remember exactly, but it was on the line that he had researched, you know, basically every option, and he can't do anything. Something to that effect. When I read it at the time, I thought, you know, that's kind of strange. You just say no, you know, you don't research. So whatever, you know, that came out, but nothing big was made of it. So now I think, you know, they'll want him to obviously clarify what he did do if he was researching and, you know, nothing came about.
Yeah, no, I said because I remember the same story because I remember, you know, reading the stories that he was looking to anybody and everybody, you know, went to Dan Quayle, went to this judge, went, you know, everywhere possible to find a way to get the yes. And just couldn't find it in the circles, fortunately, that he was looking at. I think had he found one person that he found credible, he'd go, yeah, sure, go ahead and do that. I think he'd have done it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, at the time when I read that story, I thought that was very, very odd, you know, because the rest of the story was about how he said, no, I can't do it, you know, et cetera. But the one that he said, I tried or I looked at every angle, something to that effect, so.
Yeah, I was reading an interesting LA Times piece today talking about the January 6th riot. And what they pointed out that evidently there are 658 panes of glass in the Capitol building, which is a lot of windows. But only a few of them were the original frames and the original pane of glass, which they're saying that you know, somebody may have had some inside information on how to breach these particular places, that this was probably much more well thought out, much more well planned than, well, the folks who are on trial right now would want us to believe.
Right. There was about 12 or so windows that were not reinforced. There were, you know, some upgrades that were done. We reinforced other windows after 911, but those were in adjacent buildings. And there was a decision made at that time not to do the same type of reinforcement that we did in the house office buildings. It was just a decision. Somebody didn't want certain windows there, you know. Later, they did some upgrades, but there were some, as I understand it, that maybe 10 or 12 that were just, quote, regular glass.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at this and you go, you know, this is a lot. This is an interesting question, you know, because only a handful of people would probably know that was the case, right?
Oh, yes. I mean, I knew what we were doing when we were doing it in the house office buildings with, you know, everything. Obviously, I chaired the committee and oversaw the security. And frankly, we didn't share that with a lot of people. We just didn't. There were some who knew, but in general, it wasn't widespread, you know.
Yeah, I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but it just seems to me that it's kind of coincidental that in all of the places that they pointed out where these weak spots were, that only a handful of people would know that this seemed to be almost, you know, well, the spots where the rats got in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe someone along the line is going to do a plea deal and they would particularly tell where they got information from, you know. I mean, there are certain things in the Capo, even things I wouldn't, you know, dare mention tonight, to be frank with you, that, you know, I know about. I know a lot of members don't know about it. Some of the maybe higher-ups, you know pieces of information. But there's a reason we, you know, keep it private. And it's not to hide anything nefarious, but for security purposes.
You have to protect yourself.
Protect 10,000 staffers that go in and out of those buildings, you know, the members. So I found that very strange that they would know exactly which ones were unenforced.
Yeah, it's just bizarre to me. Now, something we've talked about a number of times, as these criminals are going on trial and getting their sentences, I guess it was just the other day you had a judge, this Tanya Chutkan, who called what was being compared to the action, comparing the January 6th rioters to, the folks, the Black Lives Matter folks. And she said to compare them, the actions of people protesting peacefully, mostly peacefully for civil rights, to the mob that was trying to overthrow our government. She called that a false equivalence that ignores the real danger of the January 6th riots that posed to the foundation of our democracy. She actually sentenced the person that was in front of her to 45 days in jail, a whopping 45 days in jail, even though the prosecutor wanted nothing. As on the other side, you know, last week you had a judge appointed by Trump who the prosecutors asked for some time, ended up giving them nothing and said that, well, we're comparing them to the George Floyd rioters, and so they're giving some leniency. When did this stuff become this political?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sort of to the give up point on what they're doing with these 600 defendants. I mean, they started off so lenient that it was beyond imagination, you know, with the first person. And I don't know. I think that, you know, a lot of this has just been undercut. There's not a lot of consequences for the people who have, you know, have rioted. And then, of course, they bring in the fact that federal prosecutors also were undercutting themselves because they didn't go after racial justice protests last year and people who rioted. I don't see the two linked together. If they didn't go after people who rioted, I don't care if it was for Black Lives Matter or, you know, any group, if they didn't go after them, some cases they did, maybe some cases they didn't. But I don't see how anybody could raise that as the argument now on the January 6th rioters. And I just think the court has, for whatever reason, has started out extremely lenient. And then the case the other day of the guy who pled, and then he's going to now help them. Well, so what?
Yeah.
You know, what do they need help with?
Yeah, and now you got the shaman guy who he doesn't want to be called the shaman guy anymore because it's hurtful. Crazy.
He's going to be stuck with that one for a while.
I said they should. His penalty is they should tattoo it across his lower back.
Right.
It should be his tramp stamp. Mm-hmm. It just is what it is. But crazy times. I want to get your thoughts on the revelations of the Pandora Papers. Big break. We just found out that rich people are hoarding money in tax havens and shell corporations and everywhere they can get away with not paying taxes to us.
Well, you know, I knew about the Pandora Papers and of course, you know, the Panama Papers, and you know, they've got the whole list of people that have been, you know, involved with the offshore companies and world leaders, political leaders, business people, et cetera. And then the kind of interesting follow-up story, which was today, was about South Dakota. Well,
yep.
And Nevada and some other states. But South Dakota is like sort of the Caribbean,
yep,
of the United States.
And has been for a while.
I had no idea. None.
No, that came up when the Panama Papers came up. That came up a couple of years before that. This is not new. These tax haven states, they're specifically put into place to avoid liability and to hoard money.
Right, and they have adopted on purpose financial secrecy laws, and those laws in the United States, in those states, in particular, again, South Dakota, Nevada are mentioned, they rival the offshore laws.
Yep.
So, you know, you don't have to go all the way to the Caribbean. You can do it in South Dakota.
Yeah, you don't have to go to the Cayman Islands. But, you know, the same thing. You've got buildings that have, you know, 20,000 P.O. boxes in there. And each one of those is a separate pass-through, a separate corporation, separate shell deliberately put into place to be able to hide and shelter money from whatever entity, from you know, taxation to the government, from ex-wives, from child support, whatever. It's a way to hide things.
Yes, and the article said that year after year, South Dakota, they have approved legislation every single year for multiple years. And the legislation is drafted by industry insiders and provides more and more secrecy and more protection for, quote, trust customers in the United States. And, of course, people from abroad are coming in.
Yep. No, I remember, you know, not too long ago, they were literally advertising that on the radio. Come to Nevada, you know, where you can set up this to limit your liabilities.
It's amazing.
And our laws are so badly broken, and we've got, you know, people who aren't paying attention, I think, that allow this stuff to happen. Is there anything the federal government can do to stop this?
Well, it could. I mean, look, there's, you know, the Fed Treasury, and obviously you need, you know, certain permits to operate, you know, any type of trust, et cetera. And so I think that the Fed could really very, very easily go in and say, you know, you've got international companies in here. You've got people going across state lines. The minute that happens, that's not an internal state issue anymore, Rick. So, yes, I think the Fed, if it wanted to, nobody's made a comment on this article today, by the way, no one from the Fed. And if they wanted to, I think they could do something about it.
Yeah, because you got to wonder how many of the members of the Fed had things hidden around, because we're finding out they were doing some trading that they shouldn't have been doing.
I was thinking about that, you know, who's sheltering what or who's protecting what, because, again, there wasn't even a comment made on the article today.
Yeah, I mean, but the reality is you look at this, and it's not just, you know, our billionaires. It's not just the captains of industry.
Right.
It's, you know, it's pop singers and athletes and political leaders. It's the wealth class of this country divided from the rest of us, you know, it's basically stealing resources from our country and others around the globe, but just not here. So that, you know, kids don't get the education that they should be getting. People don't get the health care or the employment that they should be getting. They're literally robbing us blind every single day, and have been doing it for a very long time.
Right. Tax shelters. It's exactly what they are. They function for that specific purpose, and they're guarded. I mean, what South Dakota is doing is it rivals, like I said, the Caribbean or Switzerland.
It's crazy. Just crazy stuff. And as I said earlier, we should grab the shovel and dig up Dwight David Eisenhower's policies from the 50s and start taxing rich people at 92%. Or as my buddy Rich Ojeda said, we just need to eat one of them.
Right. Or just take a small percentage, it'll add up.
Yeah. No, I look, at some point, you've really got to send a message. And it's the same thing that we're talking about with these January 6th rioters. There's been no message sent. So if every time they do something wrong, they get a slap on the wrist, they go, oh, I can get away with it because crime really does pay.
Well, yeah, and people say, well, okay, you know, it should be treated like other buildings. Well, there is a difference, first of all, of what was going on that day. Second of all, the motive of people trying to interfere with what was going on that day. Then you get to the destruction part. And it's the U.S. Capitol. And so, you know, it does have a little bit higher standard if you happen to try to go in there. Because you try to go in the White House, you know something's going to happen to you.
Yeah. No, they're going to shoot you. And then you're not a martyr. You just got shot.
I thought it was interesting that time when Trump said about, you know, all what they were doing. I thought, well, if he was in the Oval Office and people, you know, thousands of people were coming over the White House fence, I will bet you, he would have a different theory of what should be done.
No, it's an excellent point. And your point about, you know, you just walk into a post office and you end up getting 5 years. That is really, you know,
you're done.
I don't know how clear it can be.
Yeah, you go into a post office and you smash one window and again, see what happens to you.
Mm-hmm. I want to get your thoughts on this House Appropriations Committee, the top Republican on this House Appropriations Committee, this Fortenberry guy, Jeff Fortenberry, Republican from Nebraska. Republicans are saying he's facing potential federal prosecution. Thoughts?
Well, you know, anytime. Now, you said the Republicans said that?
Yeah, the Republicans are saying about their own guy. Evidently, what they're claiming is he set up a legal defense fund because he claimed that the Biden FBI was using its unlimited power to prosecute me on a bogus charge.
Oh, right, right.
And, well, I guess it was just a way for these illegal campaign contributions to come in from this Lebanese-Nigerian billionaire. And they didn't send me any emails, but one of them.
Right. And he set up that legal defense fund, and he was making the claims that he was going to be prosecuted on a federal level. And then he put a fundraising page for a new legal expense fund. So he had a second one, Rick.
Yeah.
Which was then taken down after, you know, all the people started to look at it. And he was saying that the FBI is using, you know, everything they have within their power to prosecute him on some type of charge. But, you know, that there really wasn't a charge. And then, of course, a spokesman for him later said that the congressman never saw or approved any of the language. Well, I've had a legal defense fund set up. When you have a legal defense fund set up, guess who has to sign the legal defense fund?
You do.
You better believe it.
Ultimately, you signed on the dotted line. You better know what you're signing away.
So if they said that he had no knowledge of that, that's an absolute lie. He had to have had knowledge of it to get it set up. This was some kind of fundraising scheme that I don't understand, you know, how he thought he was going to get away with something. You know, if you, in fact, and I can tell you this, if you're in trouble and you actually have legal expenses, you create it, you then take it to the House. The House counsel looks it over, and then the Ethics Committee takes a look at it to make sure that it's all up to speed of how you're going to establish your legal defense fund. That's clear cut how you do it.
No, and that's not what he did. So slap on the wrist, or does he get ousted?
I mean, I think this is a big one.
Okay,
you know, I really do, because he had some foreign money, you know, into it. I just think of this one. I don't know how they don't do something with this one.
I'm with you. Lastly, I wanted to get your thoughts on the 52 planes that were flying towards Taiwan from China.
Well, I think China does, you know, a lot of saber rattling. I mean, it's scary, but I think that it's saber rattling. And right now, of course, I think it's ironical on the heels of our trade rep, of course, talking about China and, you know, how China has not led, you know, up to their end of the commitment. And so I think that it's more of a, like I said, show of force. It's a chess, you know,
yeah, a little chess, yeah, I think saber rattling we'll go with.
And also, I'm not so sure it doesn't tie into, you know, what has been happening in the last 3 or 4 days with our trade rep. China's not happy about the Biden administration, you know, keeping tariffs and then making some statements today about what China has to do. So maybe this is also part of it saying, okay, you know, you're going to get us upset. We're going to fly around Taiwan.
All right.
Yeah.
So you're not concerned?
No. I think it's more, you know, again, saber rattling on China's part.
All right. Good stuff, Bob. As always, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend, Bob Ney. No, look, I saw that story and I'm going, you know, anytime China starts rattling the sabers, you start wondering, you know, when they're going to say, we've decided that this whole little Taiwan thing is over. You're now us. Even though they still push that and made NBC feel very uncomfortable. And finally, evidently, the Supreme Court has decided that the District of Columbia will remain a representative-less state or a voting representative-less state. The court's four-sentence order cited a case from 2000 where the justices then said the same thing. So, sorry, no voting rights for you in D.C., which is interesting because, you know, the whole point of the country is, you know, taxation, representation, that kind of stuff. I feel for the District of Columbia because I think there should be two senators from there. I think that at this point, it's a big enough place that has enough people, should be its very own state. Comes back to voting power. It comes back to a lot of the things that we've been talking about. But I really would like to hear some thoughts on these Pandora Papers. Is this just the latest of, hey, the revelation that we know there are different rules for you and me and the rest of us than there are for the very wealthy? Is there something that comes out of this? You know, is it possible that in this moment, you know, more money to the IRS, higher tax rates on millionaires and billionaires become possible because of this? Or is it just going to be another one of those moments where we shame a couple of people because, you know, Vladimir Putin's evidently got a mistress that he spends money on in an apartment or something. The King Abdullah, who, you know, is hoarding money. Wow. Didn't know that. You know, Tony Blair, same thing. You know, you see all of this hiding and hoarding and cheating of we the people out of resources. And it's something, again, we've known for a very long time. The question is, what are we going to do about it? You know, when I talk to Republican voters, especially, they've been sufficiently trained. Anytime you hear the word tax, get all frothied up, get all bunched up in the panties because, oh, that means me. No, you know, the tax plan that Biden wants to move forward is anyone making over $400,000 a year, and your taxes will go up a little bit. And I say we go back to the Eisenhower tax code, where every $2,000 it inches up a little bit more. So the more you make, the higher your tax rate's going to be incrementally all the way up to that 92% tax rate at a certain point. Make it $10 million a year, to make it $20 million a year, whatever, but get to it. Just my thoughts. Again, I'd love to hear yours. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any of today's program, thericksmithshow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. If you missed any of today's program, make sure you get that podcast. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com. Follow us on social media, on Twitter @RickSmithShow, Facebook. When it's up and working, you can give us a like. Also over at YouTube, subscribe, share, comment. Good stuff. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.